From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of March, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, we'll check in with Matt Bennett at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And along the way, we'll discuss the agricultural news for the day, including the president's brand new budget released this morning. Deep cuts for agriculture included there. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media, public radio for the farming world. You may find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan. I take it you made it back to the great state of Texas okay last week.
Yes, I'm back in Texas, actually, this afternoon down in Houston on our way to go all the way down to the tip. So, but we wanted to stop by and see my daughter and son-in-law for a couple of days, and then we're heading on south.
Well, you enjoy that trip. Tell me a little bit about what you've seen over the last several days in the marketplace, especially the strength today, and whether it means anything technically or we're just in a consolidation mode of some sort.
Well, it could mean something technically. We still have another day to go, but the way the markets have traded this week by taking out last week's low early in the week and now have firmed up to being unchanged, I think, in corn. Beans are still maybe behind for the week. Same way with wheat is maybe like unchanged. But if we could muster some follow-through strength on Friday, then we would have an opportunity anyway to post some weekly reversals to the upside. And I think if that would occur, I think then that would kind of lay the technical foundation anyway for the market to maybe firm on into the first part of the growing season. Now, we still have one major report to go through, and it will again remind the trade of how large the supplies that we have on hand here in the United States. And of course, the one that everybody's watching, of course, is going to be planting intentions and how big the bean acre really is, and how many acres of corn are we going to lose, at least to start out the growing season. Mother Nature may have a lot to say with it as we get into April and May, but at least the USDA will give us the initial reading anyway of what they're seeing happening out in the country.
Which of the three crops, corn, soybeans, or wheat, technically looks best at this time?
Well, I'd say probably the corn market. It took a pretty good tumble last week. And same way with soybeans, but corn, I think you could depend upon how you want to draw the trend lines and how you want to visualize it. I still think corn and wheat still can be classified more in an uptrend. Soybeans are probably still viewed more as a sideways. We broke out to the downside of that sideways range, and now we're trying to crawl our way back into that sideways range. But cyclically, all three commodities are, I think, in sync to kind of strengthen together as we go on into the early part of the growing season. The question is which one will be a leader? And at this time, none of the fundamentals really would argue that either one could really be a leader. I mean, corn could maybe be a leader based upon a much smaller acreage. Wheat could be a leader because of a smaller acreage. We still have weather issues, I think, yet to build into this market. After last week's technical collapse based upon the supply-demand tables and reminding the trade, not only here in the United States but around the world, that we've got an adequate supply of inventory. The thing that I think is the most noticeable on the charts this week is the big decline that we saw in the dollar yesterday after all this hype about the Federal Reserve Board cranking up the interest rates a full quarter of a point. And that was a classic, you know, buy the rumor, sell the news. I'm still in the opinion that a weaker dollar is still going to be the story for this year. And I think that weaker dollar will, in turn, be a supportive price influence to commodities. You can take a look at gold. Looks like it's put in a pretty good bottom. It looks like maybe crude oil has stopped its slide. So if you look, I think at least short term anyway, when you look at the chart patterns and the way the markets have performed, they're all laying the groundwork for some price strength as we go, you know, toward the end of March, and we'll see what the March report says, and then we'll go on into the growing season. But I think the weakness of the dollar tells you that the Fed has basically lost control of the monetary policy with their 0% interest for basically almost 15 years. And inflation is definitely picking up. It just depends upon probably who does the survey and what you want and what they want you to read out of that survey. But everything I buy is costing me more money. So the only thing that still is, I guess, reasonably priced is gasoline. We still have sub $2 gasoline in Texas. So that's still nice, you know, driving around in gas hogs at $2 a gallon. But I don't think that'll last forever, though.
Mm-hmm. What kind of suggestions do you have for producers? Should they just stand pat at the moment and wait it out?
Well, if it was me as a farmer, yes. I would give this market an opportunity to recover from last week's tailspin. And then if some selling opportunities or some pricing opportunities would occur between now and the March report, then they would maybe consider that. But yes, from what I've seen after last week's decline and then what we're seeing happen this week, I would tell everybody to kind of be patient here and see what kind of recovery we can get. And I guess I want to be, you know, I think beans longer term may be more bullish than everything else. But I can't give you a good fundamental reasoning other than some off the wall fundamental event that's going to maybe occur. But I do think, though, corn, we'll find out in the March report how much corn is still in producer hands. And if that's a fairly large number, then that will still make corn very difficult to rally. It's still just about, this is the time of year that you're basically going to have to build in some form of weather premium in the market for one reason or the other to kind of lift this market out of the doldrums as we go on into April. And I think that's what the trade will probably be watching for, you know, as we go forward.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today and look forward to having you on the show again next week.
Very well, Todd.
And of course is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, you know, yesterday, President Donald Trump directed the Environmental Protection Agency to reconsider the final determination of CAFE standards. The executive vice president for the American Coalition for Ethanol, Brian Jennings, is pleased with that decision. He says the EPA under the Obama administration rushed the review, which did not allow high ethanol fuels like E25 or E30 to help meet those standards.
EPA really rushed to finalize some standards that, on balance, do good things, but really shut out any opportunity for high ethanol fuels in that range of E25 to E30 to play a meaningful role in meeting those standards in the future. So what President Trump has done today is kind of put the decision-making process back on its original track, which gives us a chance to make the case for ethanol.
Jennings says with the review back in place, there's plenty of time for ACE, the American Coalition for Ethanol, to bring their message to the EPA. He says next week, 70 American Coalition for Ethanol members will be in the nation's capital and talking to the EPA and congressional lawmakers.
And one of the most important things for us to do is to convey to EPA, there are some short-term priority issues we would like to see tackled, and then there are some longer-term opportunities that we feel are really important. And high-octane fuel is one of those. The ability for a higher ethanol, high-octane fuel to help automakers achieve fuel economy needs.
The president has directed EPA to revisit the final determination to allow additional consultation with the public, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and the California Air Resources Board. In other news from Washington, D.C., and the Trump administration, overseas shipments of U.S. commodities for international food would be in deep trouble. Under the budget blueprint the Trump administration released at 7 a.m. Eastern Time this morning, the White House's plan to beef up defense spending by $54 billion means that drastic cuts to non-defense spending would need to be made to almost every other agency. The USDA would take a 21% cut, with reductions focused on USDA service center activities, the Forest Service, the Water and Wastewater Loan and Grant Program, and the McGovern-Dole International Food for Education Program, among other things. Foreign aid is one of the biggest targets of the administration's America First budget. The president is calling for a 28% cut to the State Department, including USAID, the agency tasked with coordinating international food aid. Now, that could be bad news for farmers. In 2014 alone, USAID spent $1.3 billion to purchase U.S. crops and send them to food-strapped parts of the world. And according to a Congressional Research Service, or CRS, report, shipping U.S. crops abroad as opposed to sending money to needy areas and allowing for local decision-making on where to buy food, as many other countries do, supports U.S. farmers and jobs, commodity groups say, but it yet needs to be seen whether that argument will have any traction as the Trump administration pushes to bolster defense programs, build a wall along the border with Mexico, and shrink the federal government's headcount and footprint. Well, let's stay in Washington and with the White House, but we'll switch topic areas and move to trade. Nearly a dozen U.S. food and agriculture industry leaders received some comfort regarding the new administration's trade agenda during a 45-minute meeting yesterday at the White House with three top trade advisors for Trump. Gary Cohn, director of the National Economic Council, Ray Starling, recently appointed as presidential advisor on food and agriculture, and Andrew Quinn, a newly named advisor on trade, assured the leaders that their industries were not forgotten in trade discussions and asked them to submit recommendations. Coalition representing more than 150 companies and trade groups to develop and submit recommendations to the NEC within the next month, though some may elect to provide recommendations separately. And finally today, under the category of in case you missed it, a federal judge in California has unsealed a slew of documents that raise a lot of questions about the relationship between the EPA's pesticide office and the industry it regulates. They show, for example, that months before the agency's Cancer Assessment Review Committee issued its conclusion that glyphosate is not likely to be carcinogenic to humans, Jess Rowland, the chairman of the committee, gave Monsanto a heads up in an email. Monsanto, meanwhile, told the New York Times that the disclosure does not put into question the research that underlies the safety claims of its pesticides. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. This month, USDA predicted Brazilian farmers would raise a record-sized corn crop. Even if they do, because the United States is far and away the biggest player on the world stage, one agricultural economist sees demand holding the price of corn steady. Well, last fall, U.S. farmers harvested a 15.1 billion bushel corn crop. By comparison, Brazilian producers will take in 3.6 billion bushels this year. At least that's what USDA is predicting at the moment. Much of that crop has just been planted, and there's a great deal of weather between now and harvest time, 3 months from now, says Todd Hubbs, University of Illinois agricultural economist.
Just like any, you know, weather-related crop, the possibility is there for a bad crop year. I feel like that number, you know, it could turn out. It really could. Even if it does, we're still the major corn producer in the world, and a lot of what's going on domestically does provide some support for corn prices moving forward. We've seen a really strong corn use for ethanol, and they raised that number another 10 million bushels. On the flip side, they once again lowered feed and residual use for the old crop corn.
The end result of the changes to the U.S. corn balance sheet was a wash, meaning there really wasn't a change in how much corn will be left over at the end of this marketing year. Still, U of I's Hubs, despite two big corn crops, thinks there's hope.
I feel like the domestic market feels pretty strong in corn right now.
We'll learn more about how much underpinning strength there might be in the corn market March 31. USDA releases two reports that day. One will estimate how much corn has been used to feed livestock in the nation, and the other surveys how many acres of corn and other crops U.S. farmers expect to plant this year. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.